Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Kia ora koutou and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. My name is David and I'm an alcoholic and chairperson of today's meeting. We open AA meetings with the Serenity Prayer, and I invite you to join me. God, grant me serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose today is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Now, could we all introduce each other going around, please?
My name is Graham and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Graham.
Daniel, alcoholic.
Daniel.
Joe, alcoholic.
Hi, Joe. Anne, alcoholic.
Hi, Anne.
Hi, Anne. I'd also like to welcome our overseas listeners. We have quite a few in America. Welcome to you. And a special kia ora and guten tag to Yasmin and Danny in Berlin and to Lorna in Ireland, we think Dublin. Welcome to you all. I'd now like to ask Daniel if he could read today's reflections.
The worth of sobriety. Every AA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 12 Steps and Traditions, page 160. When I go shopping, I look at the prices, and if I need what I see, I buy it and pay. Now that I am supposed to be in rehabilitation, I have to straighten out my life. When I go to a meeting, I take a coffee with milk and sugar, sometimes more than one. But at the collection time, I am either too busy to take money out of my purse or I do not have enough. But I am there because I need this meeting. I heard somebody suggest dropping the price of a beer into the basket, and I thought, that's too much. I almost never gave $1. Like many others, I rely on the more generous members to finance the fellowship. I forget that it takes money to rent the meeting room, buy the milk, sugar and cups. I will pay without hesitation 90 cents for a cup of coffee at a restaurant after the meeting. I always have money for that. So, how much is my sobriety and my inner peace worth?
Thanks, Daniel. And could I ask Joe, please, to read How It Works from the Big Book, pages 58 to 60.
Yeah, I'm Joe, our colleague.
Hi, Joe.
Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnest at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go, absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. There is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he was sought.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
And welcome again. This is the Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. If you'd like to contact AA anywhere in New Zealand, you can call 0800 AA Works, which is 0800 229 6757. You can catch us, get to us by email at help@aa.org.nz, and the website is www.alcoholics-anonymous.co.nz. Now, could we start the sharing, please, with Anne? Could you share with us, please?
Thank you. My name's Anne. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Anne.
And very lovely to be at a meeting. And, you know, we're in a little studio, and very lovely to think. I actually, Lorna, if you're listening, I have you in mind. It's very, very lovely to know that you're there and you're a part of this fellowship and what connects us as members of this fellowship. Anyway, a little bit about my story in how it works. You know, we hear our story in those stories of others. You know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. You know, and why did I come to AA? Well, I knew probably for 2 years before I came that I had a problem, and the problem was getting worse and worse. And in AA, I've heard it described as a kind of a progressive illness. You know, I spent my life probably looking for the solution to my problems outside of myself. I had, endless sessions with counsellors trying to work out, you know, what somebody had done to me that made me feel so bad that I needed to drink so much. And, this was, I kind of grew out of this sense of, you know, this, I had to fix myself, and I couldn't, you know, and I knew alcohol was a problem. I never knew I was an alcoholic, actually. And I had all sorts of words to describe it, you know. I was alcohol dependent. I was high functioning. I liked that. I liked the idea that I was a high functioning alcohol dependent woman. But, you know, it just was getting to a stage, you know. I began as a social drinker. That progressed to being a heavy social drinker. That progressed to being a heavy social daily drinker. I created all the opportunities to open those bottles of wine. My poor family didn't, you know, noticed the increase. But then it progressed to heavy secret drinking. So I was, you know, hiding bottles and drinking at times when no one saw me. I could progress drinking until 1 a.m, under the illusion that I was sort of carrying on, or I needed just another drink to carry on working. And, you know, the late night working binges were actually late night drinking binges. And, you know, I just got sick of that, waking up in the morning with a, you know, my tongue stuck to the roof of my mouth, crashing headache. And, you know, and this is the denial, or the kind of illusory state of mind that we can conjure in ourselves, what I conjured in me, which was, you know, I probably feel so bad, I probably need a bit of medicine. And I made myself a lemon drink with honey. And then I think, it's a bright idea, I'll just put a great dollop of whiskey in that. That's medicine. So this was, you know, my little morning pick-me-up. And I knew at the back of my mind that normally you shouldn't, you might have a bit of a problem if you started drinking before 6 p.m. So this wasn't drinking, this was medicine, and the bottles of wine at lunchtime were just, you know, work lunches and generally the ongoing kind of illusion. But they say that you come to Alcoholics Anonymous when you have reached a kind of rock bottom. You've just lost something. And, you know, it was that absolute recognition that I just couldn't do this on my own. And I rang the AA helpline. And this woman, and I still remember and recognise the tone of that voice, was just full of encouragement and full of kind of, it was such a supportive voice, and pointed me to a meeting, said, you'll find people just like you. And that first meeting was really, to make the decision to attend a meeting was really me giving up, because I knew that I couldn't do this on my own. And that reaching out for help, in that state of mind, recognising that somehow there was something kind of deeply wrong with me, that nothing outside of me was going to fix it. It was going to have to. And we talk about, you know, that moment where you recognise your powerlessness. And that is an extraordinary gift, really, because, and they talk about it, I heard the phrase is the gift of desperation. G-O-D, you know, and that was my first sense of a kind of spirit, the spiritual component of this program. And, you know, so, and I heard my story, and I was told many, many things early on, very kind people encouraging me not to run away, nervous and frightened at the end of a meeting, that, you know, just keep coming back, which I did, get a sponsor, get into the heart of AA, you know. And I did think for a while, you know, when I read the banners on the wall, and I didn't have a problem with the idea of God. I was brought up a Catholic, so, you know, and I was never a negative or regretful Catholic. I just thought the church had lapsed, and I was probably doing this on my own. Life was on my own, but... So that this was a spiritual program I found intriguing, not a frightening thing. And I knew that the cause of my alcoholism was something, this deep hole inside me that all my efforts was never going to fix on my own. So I had this kind of willingness, they talk about the how of the program, honesty, that first step of knowing what a state I really was in. open-mindedness, that I didn't know the answer and that AA may have the answer. and willingness. And that is described often as the willingness to go to any lengths. And I think those were the three things that I grabbed hold of. And I did what I was told. I've never in my life really liked ever doing what I'm told. I mean, and, you know, when I first read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I thought I was going to read this I was going to discover the answer, and perhaps hopefully I might walk away and really suddenly become this wise person who could do everything all on her own again. And that, you know, I was disabused of that as soon as I started working with a sponsor, because I didn't really have a clue. I had to really learn and understand what this illness is, that there's a mental component, you know, an emotional component, and those combined, you know, that kind of, where does that phenomenon of craving come from? That first drink, you know, to quench something that requires more and more and more. So that, and there is at the heart of it, so it's mental, emotional, physical, that physical phenomenon of craving. But the solution to all of that is spiritual. And that's the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I worked with a sponsor to understand. I could never have done that on my own by reading the big book, despite thinking that I'm really rather clever. You know, I spent far more time when I first read it on my own thinking that it needed to be rewritten, and having no sense of actually the depth of what is in what the depth of what is there and accessible through working the 12-step program with others. So we don't recover on our own. I've never had a desire to leave AA thinking that I am recovered. You know, I have a gift. The gift of recovery is one day at a time. You know, I'm sober today and I work this program, and the gifts of recovery are extraordinary. And they're invisible to most people in the world except my fellow members of AA. And I'm incredibly grateful, and I love the life I have today. You know, I don't think about alcohol. In fact, and I think about life and how to live life to the best of my ability. And that brings joy. It doesn't bring ease, because life on life's terms is kind of always challenging. But I'll leave it there. And I'm just great to be here. So thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Anne.
Thanks, Anne. Mm-hmm. And that telephone helpline that Anne mentioned, you can call 24 hours a day from anywhere in New Zealand. It's 0800 AA Works, which is 0800 229 6757. Now, could we ask Joe to speak now, please?
Yeah, hi. Yeah, my name's Joe and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
And yeah, part of my story is I reckon I drank for 25 years, and 23 of those years I could always summon up a reason why next time it'll be different. Next time if I don't drink whiskey, it was the whiskey I drank last night that got me aggro and got me into a fight, the fire water. If I just stick to the beers, I'll be all right. Or it was the cheap wine. If I don't be so miserable and spend a bit more money on a better bottle of wine, I won't get a bloody hangover like I've got. So yeah, 25 years I could always summons up, you know, conjure up a reason why it'll be different. But in the last 2 years of my drinking, I found myself unable to wash away that horrible feeling I was having for myself at certain times. And I put down, you know, those two scenarios was, I was like a dog that you kick, and the dog will, you know, get up and shrug himself off and then, where are we going now? You know, what are we going to do now? But after, you know, if you kick a dog often enough, you break their spirit. And I now recognise that, you know, that my rock bottom was like a broken spirit, where I, you know, it was times there where I just couldn't shrug off. I could, you know, the falling down and getting bruises and the vomiting and the hangovers, I could shrug them off. But in the last 2 years, as I say, my drinking got to, you know, that self-loathing where I, and it would be times where it was just because it was unkosher to have a drink, and I just would get, in the big book it talks about getting tight at the wrong time. You know, I'd have, when my son was a 10-year-old at this stage, and I'd drop him off for rugby practice, and the coach would say, oh, look, I've got so many boys this year. Is there any chance you could help out? Yeah, actually, no, I'm going to be busy on Tuesdays. And I would sit around the corner in my car absolutely hating myself, because the reason why I wouldn't do it is because I couldn't trust myself to turn up on any given day in the future for something like that. And I'd have the kids would come home with a note from school, you know, parents meet the teachers next Thursday. And I want to go to that and, you know, be involved in my children's education and see how good they're going or if they need guidance in areas. And then, and they bring this home on a Monday. And as I say, it's on Thursday. And then my head would start kicking in. Why would they schedule it on a Thursday? That's a bloody working man's drinking day. That's a payday. You know, that's... Anyway, you know, on the, you know, the parents meet the teachers might be on at 7 p.m. And I'd get home from work at 4. I can't drink tonight until after I've, you know, had the parents meet the teachers evening. And then hang on, it's, you know, 3 hours away. I could have maybe one, you know, just a pint just to wash the dust out of my throat from my work day. And, you know, I'd have this mind battle going on as to whether I should have that one drink or not. And you know, I clearly remember one time where I think I had a bottle of beer to drink before this evening, and then going to this session and the teacher's sitting, I'm sitting across the table to this teacher and I'm wondering whether she realised that I had been drinking. And I'd spend most of that time fully trying to, if I only just breathe up and down my nose and not through my mouth, it won't put the alcohol across the table and so I spent the whole time wondering whether this teacher knows I've been drinking or not, and totally missed the point of while I was there, you know, as to how, you know, whether my kids needed some guidance or not. And that scenario would catch up with me the next day. I'd remember that I had this all played out, and I would absolutely hate myself for not participating in my own bloody life or my kids' life. So it's things like that came back to me in my rock bottom when my wife had a guts full of my antics of promising to do something about my drinking and her pleading with me to do something about my drinking. After a while, she just said, stuff it, you know, if you're not going to do something, her and the kids are not going to stick around. So she up and left. And so as soon as she went out the front door, my mind just transfixed down into my basement where I had a basement full of home brew. I had the biggest stash of home brew I'd ever, you know, stockpiled. So as a drunk, it wasn't a good day to decide to give up drinking because I had... and so, yeah, she went out the front door, I opened my fridge door and proceeded to get into my home brews. And then I had that moment of clarity where I realised that, no, I actually, you know, don't want my wife to be upset and taking the kids and going off wherever she's gone. And so, yeah, I gave the number that was read out, gave that number a ring, and I acted in the moment, and I'm sure, yeah, I seem to remember after I put the phone down, if I could have picked that phone up and retracted that call, I would have. But I realised that my call had gone to the other side of town, and then the guy who took the call and realised I was in trouble, he relayed it to somebody who was closer to my house, and I didn't know how to call him off. And I remember sitting at home with an empty bottle of beer, empty glass, empty house, and yeah, I clearly remember the sound of silence in that house. The house just seemed to be humming while I was waiting for that guy to come around. And I saw him coming down my front steps, and I thought, oh no, here goes, he's going to tell me I'm an asshole for having chased my wife and children away. And he came in and he just sat across the table to me. He didn't, as if he didn't see the bottle of beer and the empty glass, he didn't say anything about that. And he just told me about the last 2 years of his drinking, which was exactly the position I was in, where, you know, alcohol just seemed to be not working anymore. Now, that basement full of home brew was enough to stay intoxicated for bloody weeks, but it wasn't going to wash away that self-loathing I had for myself, and that's why I made that call. That was my broken spirit, like that kicked dog, where I realised that, you know, alcohol is just not going to work anymore. So yeah, he encouraged me, this guy that sat across the table to me, he encouraged me to come along to meetings, and he said that he had been separated from his wife and kids, and he offered me no promises that coming to AA would resolve that issue. But he says it would, you know, it'd be certainly a good place to just get my life back. So yeah, I took his advice and came to meetings, and I realised I couldn't come to meetings to get my wife and kids back. But at meetings, I heard people talk about how they, you know, had similar situations, and that they got the light themselves, that, you know, that there was a life, there could be a life for Joe, whether it was Joe the family man and the husband, or so yeah, it gave me hope that, you know, that there was an alternative to absolutely hating myself like I had been for the last 2 years. So yeah, with the help of the steps, I was able to change who I was, because I'd given up drinking countless times, but that's all I ever did was just not drink. And inevitably I'd just go back to, because I had no alternative. I'd give up drinking over Christmas and, you know, so that I wouldn't ruin Christmas for the wife and kids. And, you know, with the intention that come New Year's Eve, I'm going to really get on it. So I'd be like a bear with a sore toe, and my wife would be, bugger sakes, you know, have a drink, you miserable prick. Because, you know, I now know, you know, just not drinking is not going to, I'll be a restless and irritable still. So I need the steps and the program and continuous contact with Elkies. You know, I go to try and do, I don't make a New Year's resolution, but if it was a resolution, it would be to do 3 meetings a week. So I commit myself to doing 3 meetings a week. And if I can't get to 3 meetings a week, I'm not in the position where I feel like racing off down the pub and getting pissed. What tends to happen is my loving wife becomes a bitch, and I can't be bothered doing maintenance things around the house, so that starts falling apart, and so that unmanageability starts escalating again. So yeah, with the help of, once I get into my regular meetings and, life certainly seems to go better. And I have a concept of a higher power, and And I like what Anne says, you know, it can be the group of drunks that I find at a meeting who give me good orderly direction. And, yeah, with that good orderly direction, I have gotten back with my wife and kids, and they've grown up. And you know, I did coach that rugby team I helped coach that rugby team. And I got so much joy out of doing that that little simple thing. It's a bit of a highlight in my mind. And yeah, so I'm grateful to be sober and yeah, pleased to be at another meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. And that phone number that Joe also mentioned is 0800 229 6757. And if you call that from anywhere in New Zealand, as Joe had said, somebody local will get back to you, because we have AA meetings just everywhere in New Zealand, just as they are virtually everywhere in the country. And there's AA groups where local people can help you. And you know, by taking you to a meeting if you think that would be helpful to you. And this is the AA Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. And could we ask, please, if Daniel could now share?
Hi, thanks. My name's Daniel and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Daniel.
And it wasn't the alcohol that nearly killed me. It was the power of denial. The power of denial that I could not control a simple substance, and that simple substance was far more powerful than I was, which is an amazing realization. And eventually I drank for 30 years, and 10 of them were fun, 10 of them were difficult, and 10 of them were a hell that I wouldn't have wished on my worst enemy. And during the period of time when it was difficult, what that meant was that I couldn't be entirely relied upon, or I had to ensure that whatever activity I was engaged in, it had to be close to where a drink could be got. So if I went to the theatre, I had to make sure that we arrived early so that I could get a few drinks in before the performance started. And then I could also then ensure that I had ordered the interval drinks. And then after the show was finished, whatever it may be, there was then the opportunity to go to a restaurant and have a nice meal and a couple of bottles of wine. And I thought that was normal behaviour. It was not, of course. And the illness, or the disease, as we call it in AA, it was such that it gradually, over time, began to hold much more of a grip on me and my life, to the extent that not only had I become a daily drinker, which I'd been for a number of years, but I then started to go on benders of maybe 2-3 days in duration, where all I was doing was drinking, passing out, drinking, passing out, drinking, passing out, and that went on interminably. And eventually I reached a point, or I reached a truth, I should say. And we often in AA called such a truth the gift of desperation. I realised starkly that I couldn't live with alcohol, and I couldn't live without it either. And that is a frightening place to be, and was a frightening place to be for me. And at that point, I realised that I either had to find some way of getting sober, or I had to top myself because I couldn't carry on doing what I was doing. And I had made many, many attempts to stop over my lifetime. I'd gone to a controlled drinking program at one point, and the idea was that you had to have a certain number of units only per day, an overall number of units per week. Well, I think I would confess that it did reduce the quantity of alcohol that I drank temporarily, because I was trying to get down to the necessary bar, but I did fail miserably. But the people were very well intentioned. But what they didn't understand, and nor did I, was that I had by then gone beyond the capability of actually controlling my drinking, and I'd lost control of it some time before. And I can pretty much, with the benefit of hindsight, trace that back to the point where I started to drink to change the way I felt. And once I had started to do that, then alcohol had become a source of comfort rather than a source of social conviviality, or even a heavy drinker. Being a heavy drinker doesn't necessarily mean that you're wanting to change the way you feel. But once you start to want to change the way you feel, then I found that I was really on the slippery slope, and it got worse over a long period of time. And what happened to me in the end was that I was rescued by an angel. I was living up in the north of England at the time, in Cheadle. I was taken... I probably had about four detoxes in the previous year, for a week apiece. But, of course, I just went back drinking as soon as I got out. But at the end of one of those, I was suggested I went to see a doctor. And I went to see this doctor, and she happened to be the fund holder for Stockport Area Health Authority. And she took one look at me and said, "Daniel, I think you could benefit from going into treatment." And if she'd said to me, "Daniel, I think you should go to the moon," I'd have asked her when the first rocket was, because I didn't have any answers. She made two phone calls, one to put money aside, and the other phone call was to get me into a place down right at the other end of the country in Weston-super-Mare. And I was taken down there by a work colleague, and and when I got there, I suddenly felt, as I walked through the door, I felt that I was in a safe place. And what I was eventually... Part of the treatment program in that establishment was working through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I was introduced to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in that place. And I started... I didn't believe any of it, but I was willing to try, because I didn't have any other answers. And so I did sincerely try to do work through these steps in conjunction with a counsellor who himself had been an addict and was recovering. And what happened was that after about 4 weeks in this place, I was in a dormitory with a number of other men, and I remember waking bolt upright in the bed at 6 o'clock in the morning and suddenly realising that I hadn't thought about a drink the day before. And that had not happened for 30 years. And I was doing step two of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is essentially suggesting that that my behaviour was insane, and by that it meant only somebody with an unsound mind would continue with that behaviour, and that I could come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And that I suddenly realised that if I could live without thinking about a drink for one day, it might be possible to drink to not have a drink for more than one day, and that was what began to happen. So that was my step of hope, and I was then committed to going to AA when I got out of that establishment, and I have continued to do that for a good long period of time now. And I don't think about a drink these days, but I'm very, very careful about my behaviour, because I realised it was not the drink that caused my behaviour to change, it was my behaviour that caused me to drink. And I got that the wrong way around, but that's for sure was the case, and I haven't now had a drink for a goodly number of days. So thank you very much for being here and asking me to share.
Thanks, Daniel. And we're getting to the end of our Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. Could we ask Anne, please, to read the promises?
Right, the AA promises. Now, I love this part of the big book. This is from page 83 and 84 of the big book, and it comes in the middle of the kind of manual that the book is, to actually of the steps, and it comes after step 9, and there are 12 steps, which is it's the instruction manual for interior change. Which is dependent, you know, not on me, which I learned and I'm incredibly grateful for. But these are really beautiful, and I think many in AA will attest to this being kind of the fundamental benefits of recovery. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realise that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialise if we work for them.
Thanks, Anne. And this has been the AA Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. And if I can remind you that you can contact AA by going to, you can call 6757, that's 0800-229-6757, or you can find us on the website www.alcoholics-anonymous.co.nz. And thank you for Daniel and Joe and Anne and Graham for being here. And David, I've been your host. And we close, as we do all our meetings, with the Serenity Prayer. So, God,
grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Thanks, David.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.